The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayabhataka Swami Maharaj on September 15, 1979 in Los Angeles, California. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 9, Text 9.
Translation. By His Divine Grace, Sri Srimad A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Persons who worship you simply for the sense gratification of this bag of skin are certainly influenced by your illusory energy. In spite of having you, who are like a desire tree and are the cause of liberation from birth and death, foolish persons such as me desire benedictions from you for sense gratification, which is available even for those who live in hellish conditions. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Dhruva Maharaja repented because he had come to the Lord to render devotional service for material profit. Here he condemns his attitude. Only due to a gross lack of knowledge does one worship the Lord for material profit or for sense gratification. The Lord is like a desire tree. Anyone can have whatever he desires from the Lord. But people in general do not know what kind of benediction they should ask from him. Happiness derived from the touch of skin or sensuous happiness is present in the life of hogs and dogs. Such happiness is very insignificant. If a devotee worships the Lord for such insignificant happiness, he must be considered devoid of all knowledge. Thus end the purport by Srila Prabhupada. So the five-year-old son of Maharaj Uttanapada, the great Dhruva Maharaj, after completing rigorous, intent concentration in devotional service of the Lord, was so fortunate that he saw Krishna face to face in his Narayan form. Seeing God face to face, Dhruva Maharaj is reflecting how he had been worshiping God in order to regain his kingdom, the kingdom of his father, which he was illegally and improperly evicted from. Thinking in that way, Dhruva Maharaj was experiencing extreme pain. How he had been so foolish to worship Krishna and in return asking for a material benefit. It describes here that the Lord is just like a desire tree. A desire tree fills all the desires of the devotee and provides wonderful things. Whatever one desires, the desire tree provides. Of course, there may be some misconception that what kind of desire tree is the Lord. That whatever the Lord is giving, whatever the devotee wants, the Lord is giving. There's an example about one devotee who was so fortunate as to achieve association with a desire tree. You see. So first thing, he thought, now I can desire whatever I want. So let me desire that I can have 10 kilos of gold. Oh, desire tree, give me 10 kilos, 22 pounds, of pure 24 karat gold. Immediately he gets the gold. Oh, look at gold, gold! I've got gold! So wonderful to have gold! See, what else can I desire? Dear desire tree, please give me a 37-room house filled with servants and all kind of provisions. There it is! Look at that house! Wow! This desire tree is really wonderful. Now what will I desire? I can be a king. Desire tree, make me the king of a huge nation called America. Oh, look it. I'm the king of America. This desire tree is really fun. Anything I want, I can get. But what if I think that right now a tiger was going to come and, oh no! Oh, he ate me! You see, that kind of desire tree is not what's being talked about. Because Krishna would not give to an ignorant person that facility. He would desire a tiger come and eat him. Because people are so mad with sense gratification. So only the pure devotee, he won't desire for 22 kilos of gold for his sense gratification and for a big house for his sense gratification or for the kingdom of any country on the world for his sense gratification. He, being mature, will desire, what can I offer to Krishna? Today I'd like to have some nice mangoes, papaya, pineapple. Let me offer a nice fruit plate to Rukmini Dwarkadish. You see. Or he may desire to offer any beautiful garland. So he may say, well, here I only get a few flowers, so I'd like to have Golob Champa, rose, lotus, gardenia, so many different. So anything that he wants that fruit, that desire tree would offer. But he'd only desire those things to use in the Lord's service. He doesn't want to enjoy himself. His enjoyment is giving satisfaction and pleasure to the Lord, because he's a pure devotee. So except for pure devotees, generally speaking, others are not allowed to get the facility of this desire tree, because they don't know what is good for them. So Dhruva Maharaj, he could understand all these things, that the Lord, one can get anything he wants from him. But if someone goes to Mr. Ford or Rockefeller, and if he happens to be charitably disposed to give something, if he goes after great difficulty and then says, my dear multimillionaire, please give me one handful of cigarette ashes, then he would be crazy to ask for such a thing. One should then approach him and say, my dear sir, please give me enough fund to build a beautiful front for our Rukmini Dwarkadish temple. Why should we go and ask him for just some ashes or useless thing? So like that, if we go to Krishna and ask him, that my dear Krishna, please give me a nice car. Please give me a nice house. please give me nice food. Please arrange something so I can pay for my rent. If we just ask for all these things, actually we're very foolish, because Krishna has so much more to give. God has the greatest thing to give. No matter what we accumulate in this life, in the form of material possessions, at time of death, it'll all be finished, from dust to dust. So the real thing to ask from God is His pure devotion, His pure loving devotion, because that never ends. Just like Krishna never ends, and we never end, so the loving relationship between the devotee and Krishna, that never comes to an end. This is known as sambandha, eternal relationship. So we ask the Lord first to establish us in our eternal relationship. Who am I? Jiva sarupoi nitya Krishna das. That our eternal form is we are Krishna's servant. So the devotee first wants to realize what is my relationship. Then a second, Abhidheya. All right, I am eternal servant of Krishna. He is my eternal master. I am his servant. Now, how do I act in that position? How do I obtain the perfection of life? So that actual practice of realizing one's relationship and obtaining the perfection of life, the means is called Abhidheya, means of obtaining perfection. And the perfection himself is Prayojana, or pure love of Krishna. The Samandha Acharya by Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is Sri Sanatan Goswami. Sanatan Goswami explains all the different features of the transcendental realm in the universe and what is the relationship. Sanatan Goswami describes that although there is a gross relationship between the hellish planets, the earthly planets, the heavenly planets of this universe, and beyond the universe, the realm of Lord Shiva and the impersonal Brahman, the Brahma Jyoti and the Vaikuntha planets, Ayodhya, the place of Lord Sri Ramachandra, and Goloka, where Sri Krishna resides, and Svetadeep, Navadeep, where Lord Chaitanya resides, that in spite of all the variegated differences, in a kind of, one can see it in a perspective of difference in the Lord, actually, rather than some kind of a lateral type of comparison, the actual comparison is established through various rasa, or mellows of devotion, that the mood of the people or devotees in a certain planet, that mood or different relationships with the Lord in loving devotion or material, just like in the heavenly planets, there is a type of bhakti mixed with desire for sense gratification. In some other places, it's mixed with bhakti, mixed with desire for speculative knowledge. As it becomes purer and purer from the gross karma, vikarma to karma to akarma to bhakti mixed with karma, bhakti mixed with gyan to pure. Gyan is below bhakti mixed with gyan. Then gradually to the pure, pure, pure type of bhakti, coming to bhakti and neutrality. Then bhakti and servitude. Then devotion and friendship. Devotion and parental love. And then devotion and madhujya rasa. in conjugal love. In this way, actually, Sanatana Goswami, apart from establishing a kind of understanding of the material and spiritual world in the extent of happiness, like he described that human beings' happiness can be taken as one, numeral one, denominator. Take it that the hellish planets is less than one, negative, unhappiness. Human being happiness is one. Then one goes from human being up to, say, the Gandharvas. Then his happiness is 10 times more. Then it goes to Kinnaras 100 times. Then Chanara 1,000. Then again, like this way, as it goes up through the different demigods, each time is 10 times greater happiness than before. When one gets to Asuras, that's again greater. Those who are 100% mystic, powerful Asura. Then beyond that, one comes to the platform of the demigods. That's again, then again, Indra's 100 times more. Then Brahma's 100 times more than they, 1,000 times more than they. Then when one gets to the Brahma Jyoti, the impersonal effulgence of the Lord emanating from his body, then it describes that all the material happiness combined is not even one drop compared to the happiness of Brahman. And then from Brahman to pure devotional service of the Lord, that happiness of pure devotion compared to Brahman, Brahman is not even the quantity of water contained in a calf's hoof print in the mud compared to the ocean of happiness of Krishna. So like this, he established this relation. Also then he went into a deeper in his Maha Brihat Bhagavatamrita, the relationship between different planets in the sense of transcendental rasa or mellow. So the highest planet is Golok Vrindavan. There the highest interchange of devotion is existing between devotees. So Dhruva, he's understanding that I was approaching the Lord for some fruitive result. Like a businessman, I was going and saying, and I was thinking that I will worship the Lord when I get it, then I will ask him for a great kingdom, for so much power. Instead, I'm feeling such transcendental ecstasy. I'm feeling such wonderful love to see his lotus feet that I realize I am so foolish to desire anything but simply to serve him. What can be greater than that? Why am I clinging on to the broken glass of these material objects, which are only temporary in nature, which are going to be destroyed at any moment? At any moment, Krishna can take them away from me. I have got no stability. Simply by his mercy, I'm holding on. In spite of that, I'm only thinking how to increase my material entanglement, how to increase my material liabilities, rather than accept Krishna's mercy and fully fix my mind in his service. Of course, this is very advanced. Not everyone can immediately obtain this perfection. Therefore, it's recommended that if one cannot fully fix his mind in Krishna's devotion, if he is so unfortunate, then at least he should give the fruits of his activity. He should use his time, use some of his energy, use some of his wealth to further the service of the Lord and prepare himself for full dedication. So Dhruva Maharaj, he was already beyond all those stages. He was completely, fully dedicated. There was no doubt. He had that desire. So, therefore, he made this wonderful prayer, which was deriding the pleasure of the senses. That we are so foolish we ask for the pleasure of the senses. Of course, this same kind of, there was in India, of course, the people worship many demigods, because demigods are known to give very quick results. They don't inquire. Actually, the demigods are great devotees of Krishna. They don't ask what will be the result of what you're asking, whether it will be good or whether it will be bad. You see, they don't think that this devotee is worshiping me out of what kind of mood. All right, the demigods are preoccupied in management and in their service to Krishna. Someone's worshiping me, all right, you're approaching me, what do you want? Then they ask, please give me this, please. And in Bengal, they do Durga Puja. There, I was walking by and I heard the Brahmana. Their prayer after saying that, they say, first worship Durga, you are Narayani. You are the consort of Narayan. You are Vaishnavi. You are a devotee of Vishnu. You are the Jagat Mohini. You are the person who keeps the whole world in illusion. In this way, they glorify her. Then they get to the punchline. Then they pray, Deya, Deya, Deya. Deya, they say, Dhanam Deya, Striyam Deya, Patistan Deya, Pujam Deya, Sobham Deya, 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 Deya. Deya means give me, give me, give me. Give me wealth, give me establishment, give me beauty, give me power, give me a good wife, give me a home. In this way they go on. Janam Deya, Dhanam Deya, give me wealth. This is their prayer. So how can Durga be fooled? Oh, you are so wonderful, so wonderful, so wonderful. Give me this, give me this, give me this, give me this. They're not loving Durga, they're not loving these demigods. They're loving the wealth, the fame, the power, the other things that they can get from her. So they are not pure devotees. There's a great demon called Narakasura. Right by our temple in Guwahati is the famous temple of Kamakha Devi. Kamakha Devi is one of the Adipitas, or main places of Durga. When Durga became a little uncontrollable, Krishna divided her with his Sudarshan Chakra on the request of the other demigods into how many pieces? 56. 56 different pieces, and different pieces fell over India. So this one piece fell in Assam. So there was a demon. All the worshippers of Devi, they go there. But actually Devi, when Krishna personally, he also visited the valley of Guwahati. At that time, she ordered one of her demon daughter devotees to actually surrender to Krishna. So there's so many stories how she has brought devotees to Krishna. But of course the demons, they simply worship her for material things. Everyone goes there simply, give me, give me, give me, give me, give me. Of course, so she is in a very, must be very tiring for her to go and hear all these demands of all the people. Nobody asks for nobody with a pure heart is going. The one devotee, Narakasura, he worshipped just vigorous worship and fasting and everything. Finally, she came and said, all right, you have satisfied me. What would you like as a benediction? And Narakasura, he said, looked at her and said, you will satisfy my desire. So what is your desire? He says, I want to marry you. He says, I'm already married with Lord Shiva. Well, I want to at least enjoy you. Durga was just astonished at what predicament. You give a boon and these demons are so lusty. They're so have lusty relations with the very goddess they're worshipping. So she tricked him and said, all right, I will satisfy your desire. I'm living in the top of this hill. It's very hard for the devotees to come up here. So you build a big stone staircase. If you can build it from the sunset before sunrise, since you're a demon, your power gets stronger in the nighttime. I'll give you that advantage. If you complete it before the morning, then I will satisfy your desire. So this huge demon is picking up big boulders and building this up this huge mountain. He's building this staircase. Not a huge, but a very big hill, about 1,500, 2,000 feet high. Today, this is in bygone yugas, many, many thousands of years ago. And he's building and building this single-handedly. Just as the sunrise is coming, he's about 100 feet short. So I'm sorry, she said, you didn't make it. But thank you for the pathway. So the thing is that these demigods, they're in a very bad predicament, because everybody's going in bad. They get so disgusted sometimes that everybody's coming. When a devotee comes and begs them, please tell me how I can serve Krishna, they feel very good. They feel very good to give such advice. Lord Shiva himself is the founder of a Vaishnava Sampradaya. There's a story how one devotee worship Lord Shiva, then he got the darshan of Lord Shiva. He begged Lord Shiva, please give me the most wonderful thing in the whole universe. And so Lord Shiva said, yes, I can give you. So then you should go and see Sanatan Goswami. He said, I would like a touchstone. He said, oh, you'd like a touchstone. He also has one of those. And you can see Sanatan Goswami. Of course, many devotees, this is a common story. Now we all know how this devotee went to Sanatan Goswami in Vrindavan, and he was looking and looking, and then he finally found where Sanatan Goswami was. Fell down at his lotus feet, and he prayed, my dear Sanatan Goswami, Lord Shiva has sent me that you have the most wonderful thing in the universe. I understand you have a touchstone. The Lord, you know, Sanatan, go make up your mind. So he said, I would like a touchstone. Touchstone, what a touchstone is, almost like a desire tree in a sense. A touchstone, anything you touch with it, it turns into gold. So for a materialist, this is very handy. If anything you touch turns to gold, then you can have a very big budget for sense enjoyment. So he asked that, I would like to have the touchstone. So Nan goes, I said, yes, you go in the back, there's a garbage pit, you find in the garbage pile, there's one touchstone somewhere there. You can just look. And he's doing his worship. So then the devotee goes in the back, there he sees a huge pile of garbage, leaves, everything there, all the refuse. He looks through. There he finds one brilliant stone. He touches. Gold! 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 I'm rich! I'm rich! Gold! More than a million Krugers. Everywhere, gold. He was so happy. He was getting everything. Gold! Then he started to think that Sanatan Goswami kept it. Everyone I said, I want the greatest thing. They said, yes. And I said, touchstone. And I found this touchstone in a garbage pit. What is the really valuable thing? He must have something more valuable. Who keeps a touchstone in a garbage? What is his real wealth? That is what I must find. So then he went back and he said, Sanatan Goswami, you have kept this touchstone in the garbage pit. I'm thinking that, my dear master, you must have something more valuable even than this. Oh, yes. I have something much more valuable. Oh, may I have that? May I have that most precious object? Why not? But you must first throw away this touchstone. Throw away my touchstone? But I just got so much gold. Well, if you want the greatest thing, the most valuable thing, then you can't hold on to this petty thing. Well, you've led me in the right path once, so I'll have faith in you. So he went and threw away the touchstone, back in the garbage pit, came back, paid his obeisances. Now, please tell me, what is the most valuable thing? Please give it to me. So then, of course, Sanatana Goswami said, all right, come over here. This is a great secret. Listen. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Chant this Maha Mantra, this holy name of God. This is the most valuable thing that I possess. It will satisfy all of your desires. So in this way, Dhruva Maharaj, he was saying that Krishna himself is the desire tree. Why was I desiring such insignificant thing? He realizes that his duty is to satisfy the desires of Krishna. So he simply focuses that not on obtaining Krishna in an indirect way, but he sees that actually the direct process is by simply carrying out the order of the spiritual master, that automatically whenever Krishna is pleased, he will appear. So we simply try to carry out the orders of our previous acharyas, of our disciplic succession. Actually, Prabhupada revealed that there is a great secret to becoming advanced in Krishna consciousness. There is a great secret. That secret is one should constantly pray for the mercy of his spiritual master and the previous acharyas to advance in pure devotional service. One should pray, he should desire the mercy of the great Vaishnavas. This is the open secret. That they are very easily satisfied. Of course, one cannot approach without going through his spiritual master. If one does, that's called mayavadism. He's trying to say, I and my guru are one. That cannot. One has to approach to his spiritual master. And he begs previous acharyas, Lord Chaitanya Nityananda, for mercy, for help to perfect oneself in pure Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada, he always showed this. He always was trying to satisfy the desires of the previous acharyas. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had said that more important than big temples is book distribution. When he was at his last few days, he told Prabhupada confidentially that in the Gaudiya Math, when we build such big building, we move from our rented house, then immediately there was a conflict when we had our marble temple. Who would stay in which room? Who would take which position? Who would sit where? Now I'm thinking better to simply take out all the marble stone, sell it and print books and distribute profusely. The purport is that our first business is book distribution. And Prabhupada, he is seeing what is the mood of my spiritual master, what is the mood of the previous acharyas. They want Lord Chaitanya's movement to be spread. So he saw that first there must be book distribution, then there must be temple construction. The basis is books. Basis is transcendental books. So in the same way, Srila Prabhupada, he always was looking for a chance to satisfy one of the predictions or one of the desires of the previous acharyas. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he predicted in many places in his writing, in his monthly journals, in his books, that the whole world would one day become Krishna conscious, just as Lord Chaitanya had predicted. And he would invite all the people of the world to take part in his transcendental marketplace of the holy name. Although it was 1890, when every Indian was thinking that the British, with their big iron horses, the locomotives, they have given us the greatest thing. There's nothing greater than this. When people were wearing suits and coats and were proud to be given the title of Sir Ashutosh, Sir such and such, Mukherjee, they are so pleased to become get these titles from the Western people and drink tea and take on the Western affinities and ways and mannerisms. He was saying, no, the whole world will embrace Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. This is a very dynamic and far-reaching understanding. So, of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he predicted that at the holy birthplace of Sri Dharmayapur, that one day will come when there will be devotees from all over the world who will come to pay homage at the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, who will come and serving in the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, they will chant together, Jai Sachinanda, Jai Sachinanda, Jai Gaura Hari. So Prabhupada, he saw the desire of the previous acharya to have devotees from all over the world come to that holy place. And so then he took the opportunity, anything he could do. What does the previous acharyas want? He just jumped at the chance. Anything I can do to satisfy their desires. Anything. Whatever they want. Just like when we were in the Kumbh Mela in 1971, January, February, very cold, right in the very bank of the Jamuna and the Ganga, at the confluence. Some of us would bathe at 3-4 in the morning in the very cold waters to get the sacred dip. That year, only about 20 million people showed up. It was a small year, half Kumbh, not the full one. With a full one, 33 million people attended. They only had, for 10 miles from the river, they had big bamboos and wood things to make the people stand in queue for 10 miles. So they wouldn't stampede. Because many, many decades ago, there was a stampede where a few hundred people saw their last holy darshan. So they have a big arrangement there. So we were at that festival. There are so many sadhus. Go, Prabhupada said that many sadhus come to this special meeting, that from the Himalayas many great yogis are still meditating and they come down. He said that the thing about these yogis is that every morning they bathe in the seven rivers. They dip down in the Ganges, Jamuna, Saraswati confluence, come up in the Godavari, go down in Krishna, then they go down again up in Krishna, up in this way they go through the seven rivers. Prabhupada said, I have seen with my own eyes. I have seen. Within a matter of minutes, they dip in all of the rivers. How can Prabhupada see someone dip in rivers over 2,000-3,000 miles apart in a matter of minutes? Of course, we meditated on that one. So, I personally saw there was some yogi there who had been meditating so long his fingernails had come out of the other side of his hand. I don't know if it was how he did it, But that was how he's meditating. Maybe it was a done-up thing. I didn't... It looked pretty real. But there are a lot... Many people go for the show. So many sadhus. So Prabhupada said, we are coming. We also want to preach. We want to have association of sadhus and give association to the people. He was very humble. He said, we want association. Of course, we knew that he was going to give association of pure devotion to purify all the different people, Mayavadis and Karmakandis and different people that were going there. In our morning, mostly the devotees were up at so early in the morning. Prabhupada would give lecture and answer questions. So we had just done many programs for purchasing the Mayapur land. And that time, one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, that if we are able to bring, because the topic of discussion was a lot there, the opening of the big temple. Prabhupada wanted the big temple built immediately in a few years. If we, for the opening of the big temple, bring the President of the United States and the Queen of England to the opening, will Bhaktivinoda Thakur be pleased by that or not? So then Srila Prabhupada replied, if you bring the President of the United States and the Queen of England to the opening of the Mayapur temple, Bhaktivinoda Thakur will come down from Golok Vrindavan, take you in his hand and hand back to Golok Vrindavan, right on the spot. So if anyone is ambitious, I've already in London mentioned this, they at least have to, if their queen, and that in America, who will bring the president? You say. So here Los Angeles is our biggest community in America. Here, of course, Mukunda is going commuting back and forth. But there is your assignment. For instant mercy. So Larnet said, no problem. But I don't know about Los Angeles. No problem. Very nice. So this is a great opportunity. Actually, I realized it was kind of a transcendental competition. When I was in London, a lot of time you heard the name Los Angeles. A little bit. I think that there's some transcendental mood between London and Los Angeles and Sankirtan and Bhakta and different things. Sometimes I get that impression. When I was there, of course, when I first landed in Germany, then they gave me a very nice garland of flowers, carnation. Of course, the carnations didn't have any smell there. Which Hari Kesha, I mean, he had said, what can I do? The flowers here don't smell. There's so many chemicals they use. So then I went to, when I landed in London, then when I was leaving, then they gave me a garland of 10-pound notes. And said, and so then I had to admit that they had given the best garland to date. So in that way, they're very nice. Wherever I go, I get very nice association with all the devotees. I always feel reluctant to leave. Of course, actually Los Angeles is the big brother of Mayapur. You know, sometimes people, they say different things, that why is Los Angeles the big brother? Everyone feels that this is very appropriate. Of course, some people, they say that, well, Los Angeles should be Mayapur's big brother because Los Angeles is the biggest project in the Western world right now, and Mayapur is the biggest project in India and in the world, so it's natural that this should be big. Then other people say that, well, Los Angeles is the most broad-minded. There's so many different projects. They're very broad-minded. And so because Mayapur is encompassing so many different things, Varnashram, World Planetarium, and Samaj, so many different things, therefore it should be the Big Brother. Then, you know, there's so many different... Then some people say, well, that Los Angeles proper, that it's the Big Brother, because the intimate relationship between all of the leaders and all the devotees is a basically wonderful exchange. So, of course, all these things are correct, even more idea. But I think that Mayapur is related with Los Angeles, particularly because His Divine Grace Srila Rameshwar Swami is so keenly intent upon capturing all the mercy of the previous acharyas. And because he has that transcendental vision, what the previous acharyas desired, therefore he had above all other reasons grabbed at the chance to be the Big Brother, have Los Angeles be the Big Brother of Mayapur. So I feel, you see, this is very, I mean, already he's getting so much mercy from printing and distributing so many books. And on top of that, now he's getting trying to capture all the mercy from Mayapur. I say he's giving such a wonderful example of a transcendental capitalist capturing all the transcendental capital, the real wealth, all the mercy of the acharyas. Of course, Prabhupada, he was the most expert in this. Whenever he saw a chance to fulfill some desire, he would jump at it. But already, in Mayapur, we feel that we're already hard placed. Of course, Prabhupada said, ultimately, the projects are for book distribution, but at the present time, due to the poor situation in India, book distribution is a big struggle. People don't have so much money. We're racking our brains for ways and means. But because some people think that, well, what is the relationship between this Mayapur Indian project and between book distribution? Well, Prabhupada, he never made any qualms. It was no secret that where he put his priorities. As far as we were concerned, we know that wherever Prabhupada went around the world, he would encourage each zone in different ways. But we were never confused that we were the most important project in ISKCON. That was because Prabhupada, he wouldn't let us have that particular confusion. And I remember that in 1973 or 4, I think it was, that we were just finishing the big building, and Prabhupada gave a tremendous, he wanted to have about 150 different rooms and big buildings, everything built within 3 months. So at that time we had this big building, we only had 10 devotees. Because what happens when all the devotees come for the festival, all the devotees had already gone to Vrindavan. When they go, especially in those days when it was so much more austere, we don't have this problem anymore so much. Just they go as far as Vrindavan, come back usually. There's kind of like after a jet, there's like a vacuum created, where the jet takes off and everything behind it is sucked. So especially in those days when all the devotees would come, and then when they go, then you would find that half your devotees would be gone. They'd all go follow with the devotees. To stay there one day after the festival, it feels so empty. One day you've got 600, next day you've got 20. 10 people will go and go with the devotees. So there'd be a regular turnover the first few years. Many devotees came for a year or so, but at the festival we'd have our biggest casual. Well, this was right in the very beginning. So I remember Bhavananda Goswami was completely in anxiety. He had just came to Mayapur a year or so earlier, and then he saw that there's nobody here. I mean, there's no way we can build these buildings, no way we can do the preaching, no way we can expand these programs. So he rushed to Vrindavan, filled Prabhupada's lotus. He went and asked all the leaders. At that time, the leaders, each one said, well, you know, we got so many projects, it's that we can't help you out. But, you know, maybe I think there's one bhakta that's about to leave anyway, I'll send him over, you know. I mean, this is the, like, eternal problem we were solving, facing in those days. So then he went to see the Prabhupada and said, there's just no one we can get. I mean, just, you know, there are many of the people who would like to go, but they can't get the permission. Even though you said that you should encourage them, there's no one, I mean, fractionally everyone, they can't see it to give someone at this particular time. Prabhupada said, yes, you have to understand from their viewpoint. All right. He thought for a while, said, all right, you can take anyone you want. You just go without asking, you go at night or something, and anyone you want, you can take. But please don't take my big book distributors. Please don't take them. So, I mean, Prabhupada, he was very clear. I mean, he felt that of all the projects, his big book distribution was first. Then there are so many projects which I'm sure we can all show different letters how he encouraged and felt that these projects could spread Krishna consciousness were they properly developed. Anyway, not to leave you hanging. Bhavananda Goswami went that night with his flashlight and woke up different people, grabbed about 10, 12 devotees together, put them on a train and went back to Mayapur. So then it took things like that to actually get the buildings and the things there that the devotees are able to come and enjoy. Now there's a much different mood, of course. And the need, of course, is not so acute. There's just a few key positions. So the things are much different. But I mean, we always knew that book distribution was Prabhupada's main. And then he always said that only through book distribution will the Indian projects be built. I don't want it. I wanted to come through book distribution. Let the people double their book distribution every year. He showed how by doubling book distribution that ultimately the Indian projects can be, especially Mayapur and Vrindavan. Vrindavan was to be built first. That's practically finished. And then Mayapur finally, the big center of Lord Chaitanya's glory would be built. So he always intended that the book distribution, that should go on. That should be everyone's first look. And automatically through book distribution, the different foreign BBTs would help and see that these other projects go on. This was Prabhupada's plan, that this is natural, that Lord Chaitanya has given us the transcendental Vani. He has given us this message. So by distributing his message, we should also do something for him. So it's very encouraging whenever we see the book scores increase. Now, of course, we're going through a transition. We may have to take a strategical revamping. And so many plans are being made by our great Sankirtan generals and Los Angeles general here, how to ultimately increase book distribution. People ask that, what can we do to help Mayapur? Of course, anything that one does directly is all right, but the overall massive help, apart from what any individual does, is collectively, if everyone simply works to expand book distribution. Ours is the same goal. That will ultimately see all of these wonderful things manifest. In fact, that's what, just like people say, well, New Vrindavan was built by the sweat and devotion of the devotees, and that's a fact. But and that is what the real significance is when we see the palace of Prabhupada there. But of course, even if in Mayapur we hire the coolies to sweat and do the actual construction with a few devotees supervising them and seeing that everything goes on properly, and maybe directly the sweat of the devotees is not involved in mixing the cement except for a few of the people of us that we have to stand there and watch these coolies and scream at them. The thing is that whose sweat, whose devotion has built these things, that is directly every book distributor around the world who's distributing and whose BBT donations are coming to build these things for the previous acharyas. That their devotion is building, that has got, to me, the greatest significance. Because all of the previous acharya's desires are being manifested. Krishna was able to do with one activity many things he would achieve. So by one activity, so many things are being accomplished. That seems to be a much higher principle than to do anything which involves stopping book distribution. So just like Ramasar Swami said, he wants to build this, but he doesn't want to stop book distribution. This kind of attitude, this is directly in line with the previous acharyas. This is something Prabhupada would say. So many. What is the quality of a pure devotee? He represents the mood of his acharya. That is the qualification. So Dhruva Maharaj, before he met Krishna, he may have been confused, but once he saw Krishna, then he became very clear. He wanted simply to serve Krishna. Bhakti Siddhanta said, if anyone can construct a 20-story building, 20-story skyscraper, literally, it's right in the books, in Sri Mayapur, that they will directly go back to Godhead. So, of course, the opportunity is there for everyone to get the mercy of the previous acharyas. Anyone who distributing massive books, there's no question. So devotee doesn't care about liberation or about sense gratification. This already, that's just a cheap thing. Begging at his doorstep. Simply he's trying to develop his mood of surrender to the acharya, surrender to Krishna to satisfy their desire. And he tastes more and more nectar, increasing day by day, moment by moment. That desire increases so much. We should culture that desire. If we look in ourselves, we should see that what desire, how earnestly, how deeply are we desiring to love Krishna, to satisfy his desire through the spiritual master. The result will be, while we're chanting, we should be crying for Krishna. We should be crying for Krishna. Every time we chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. We should be crying for Krishna. If we're not crying for Krishna while we're chanting, we should know that our heart is very hard. We are very fallen. Therefore, when we are saying Krishna, instead of a heart melting, is staying like a rock. We should be feeling so sad that while I'm chanting, I'm not crying. My voice is not choking up. My eyes are not filling with tears. My hairs are not standing on end. I am not quivering in my body. My heart is so hard. Then we should cry that we're not crying for Krishna. And if we are so hard-hearted that we are not able to realize how unfortunate it is that we are not crying for Krishna to the extent that we're not crying for Krishna, then we should deeply meditate, and then we should cry that we're not crying, that we're not crying for Krishna. And if we're not crying that we're not crying that we're not crying for Krishna, then we should cry that we're not crying, that we're not crying, that we're not crying for Krishna. And if we're not crying, that we're not crying, that we're not crying, that we're not crying for Krishna, then we should cry that we're not crying, that we're not crying, that we're not crying, that we're not crying for Krishna. And if we're not crying, that we're not crying, that we're not crying, that we're not crying, that we're not crying for Krishna, then we should cry that we're not crying, that we're not crying, that we're not crying, that we're not crying, that we're not crying for Krishna. In other words, at least we should be crying that we're not crying, 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 that we're not crying for Krishna. At least we should be crying for Krishna somehow or other, how to satisfy his transcendental desires. That should be our mood. So intense, so fixed. Then Krishna, he cannot resist. All right. Thank you very much.